1920 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The special prosecutor looking into possible wrongdoing by former President Trump wants to hear from former Vice President Mike Pence. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
Last November, shortly after Jack Smith was tapped to lead the federal investigations into former President Trump, the Justice Department began reaching out to former Vice President Pence. At the time, sources familiar said Pence was reviewing the request. Now CBS News has confirmed he's been subpoenaed. Last year, Pence was able to avoid testifying before the House's January 6th panel, which sought to hear from him about the pressure he faced from Trump to reject the electoral vote certificates from certain states.
More than 20,000 people have died in earthquakes along the Turkey-Syria border. This crew in Elbistan, Turkey, briefly celebrated after pulling an elderly woman from the rubble. The UN has had trouble getting supplies into Syria because of the country's ongoing civil war. Father Tony O'Riordan is with the Jesuit Refugee Service in Aleppo.
Before the earthquake hit on Monday, one of my colleagues described the situation as hell. So if it was hell a few days before the earthquake hit, we're now in the deepest level of hell.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has moved one step closer to taking over Walt Disney World's self-governing district. The Republicans in the House there have approved a bill to require the Republican governor to appoint a five-member governing board over the Disney government. The proposal comes after a high-profile feud between DeSantis and Disney over the entertainment giant's criticism of a law critics have dubbed Don't Say Gay. Southwest Airlines Chief Operating Officer Andrew Watterson tells the Senate Commerce Committee that when it came to the canceling of nearly 17,000 flights and the stranding of more than 2 million passengers last Christmas.
Let me be clear, we messed up. And I would like to explain to you how we messed up.
Watterson says Southwest had a plan, but the storm was worse than expected, and it's upgrading software that suggests how to reassign crews after disruptions. Australian researchers may have unlocked a key to the COVID immunity. Reporter Scott Maiman has more.
The findings may also explain why some people never became seriously ill from COVID. A group of researchers from the University of Sydney found people with a high level of a receptor, currently known as LRRC15, in their lungs had less severe symptoms of the disease. The university says the new information can help design broad-acting drugs that can block viral infection, but admit such medication could still be years away. Scott Maiman for CBS News, Canberra, Australia.
A Nevada battery recycling firm wins a $2 billion loan from the Energy Department. On Wall Street today, the Dow closed down 249 points. The Nasdaq fell 121 points. This is CBS News.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/free. That's ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Due to supply shortage.
No one ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game, join the conversation with WFHR's Playmakers. Call in Monday mornings from 10.06 to 11 with your sports thoughts. And Tuesday through Friday, listen in while we talk with some of the most insightful, intriguing people in Morning Magazine. Talk radio that speaks to you. Get in the game, join the conversation at 10.06 Mondays with Playmakers. And Tuesday through Friday, Morning Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows of a low of around 13. Tonight, under overcast skies, winds out of the northwest, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 24. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Clear skies. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 12. Dry with temperatures well above average, Saturday and Sunday, and highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 36.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. What a fun day. Today was a fun day. Today was fun. Watching the children in Congress doing their little thing. The panel to investigate whatever bug is up Jim Jordan's behind today kicked off. The newly minted House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government held their first little shindig today. Oh boy, alleging there was mass weaponization of government against conservatives, of course, because, you know, bring out the violins, bring out the martyrs, because the martyrs will become marching on. It's amazing. It really is amazing. And you have to give them credit, because no one plays the unharmed martyr quite like a religious conservative Republican. You got to give them credit. Give credit where credit is due. Where they're completely unharmed, they actually end up on the positive side of things, still claiming, oh, woe is me, poor pitiful me. Yes, poor pitiful me. And this is again is one of these moments where you go, maybe you're not the poor victims that you try and make yourself out to be. Also, the Democrats, and I'm going, yeah, part of me goes, why would a Democrat jump in the middle of this? But Democratic Representative Robert Garcia, he is referring a resolution to the House Ethics Committee to oust Republican George Santos, because I don't even know where you begin in the level of deceit, lies, fantasy. I don't know where you begin from being a Holocaust survivor, or I can't even keep all of the craziness. It's so much, it's like that spaghetti theory, except all of the spaghetti stuck. I mean, that's really what it is. It's like a whole box just stuck to the wall and they're all lies. And my first reaction was, don't be stupid, Democrats. Don't bail Republicans out. They own this guy. They're allowing him to stay. They're in control. They're in charge. They should be taking care of their own. They should be policing their own. If they're okay with a serial liar in charge, never mind. We just had one for 4 years. So is it surprising to me that this is where they go? No, not so much. But we'll see where this goes. Now, there's the other part of me goes, this is a brilliant strategic move. Throw it out there because the Republicans are in charge. Make them make a decision. Say, look, we got to get him out of here for the good of the institution. We've got to save the institution. Make Republicans go on the record to say, no, he's a good guy. He's our guy. So I'm vacillating between the hang him around Republicans' neck and then, or, put them on the record for saving him. We'll see how this plays out. Also today, the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, they ramped up their tax on Joe Biden's son, Representative James Comer, the Republican from Kentucky, going full tilt boogie, full after the Hunter of the Hunter Biden. And what I found interesting is Representative Melanie Stansberry. She represents represents New Mexico's first congressional district. She, and look, I absolutely agree 100% with her. When she had this to say.
What are we doing here in this committee today? Why are we here? Why is this committee devoting a day-long hearing to a political conspiracy theory that was planted in the media by Rudy Giuliani to support Donald Trump's reelection campaign? Of all the topics we could be focused on in this committee to support the American people, how people are going to put food on their table at the end of the day, how we're going to address the economy, how we're going to address critical issues that are on people's minds every day. We are devoting an entire day to this conspiracy theory involving Twitter. Now, the mission of this committee is to root out waste, fraud, and abuse, and to conduct oversight on behalf of the American people. And if you need any evidence of waste, fraud, and abuse, how about the use of this committee's precious time, space, and resources to commit to this hearing?
She's not wrong. She's not wrong here, and she's spot on. You want to talk about waste, fraud, and abuse? We've got problems, and all they're going to do is focus on Hunter Biden. They've got to get the laptop. I mean, it's amazing, to be honest. You listen to Republicans talk, they think Joe Biden's wounded. They think that, senile, you name it. This is where they think. And you'd think they would come out with a plan for all of the things that they claim Biden has fallen down on. Oh, but no, silly American. Are you worried about the economy? Are you worried about that? Hunter Biden's laptop. That's the solution. Can't afford to send your kids to college? Hunter Biden's laptop. About to go broke and because of the high cost of medical care and prescription drugs? Hunter Biden's laptop. Being treated like garbage at work? Hunter Biden's laptop. Pothole out in front of your house not filled? Hunter Biden's laptop. Actually, that might be a good place for it, actually. But this is what we're going to get, a steady diet of division and Hunter Biden's laptop. Hunter Biden was a horrible person. Hunter Biden's laptop. And again, it's the outrage candy. It's the conspiracy stuff. It's the continually feed us nonsense and garbage while not really solving any problems. Ever. I mean, it's quite remarkable. I look at Lauren Boebert. Gun fetish Barbie, as I affectionately call her. She got her 5 minutes for the F channel to run ad nauseum when she tweeted out, "I received this document from Twitter staff last night. It shows that Twitter 1.0 executive shadow banned me as a sitting member of Congress. If they did that to me, imagine the millions of Americans that they will never know they were silenced by these woke executives." So she wants you to believe that there were these executives at Twitter who she didn't like her. She was just, she's just mean. They didn't really like her. So they're gonna ban her. And you know what? If they don't like you, they'll ban you too. Now, the reality is, what happened was she tweeted out on January 9th, 2021, "Hillary must be pissed. It took the DNC until 2020 to successfully rig an election." This is one of those things that they looked at their terms of service and said that this is what Twitter said. It violated their civic integrity misinformation policy. Again, this is a private corporation, private industry, which Republicans used to believe should be, private and not out of the control of government, she received a strike for this. Now, I have received many a strike over the years. And you know those are the rules, those are the terms of service, and that's how it goes. Now, is it right or is it wrong? We can debate that, whether the terms of service are good or bad or whatever, but you signed into them. You agreed to them when you signed up because it's not the government. It's a private entity. But she's conflating the two, saying because of this tweet that violated their terms of service, that they believed violated their terms of service, that this is somehow shadow banning her. No, they sent her a notice saying we're blocking you from being able to have your tweets seen by people who don't follow you. You don't get free carte blanche access and still get to violate our terms. Now, again, we can have this conversation, whether this is right or wrong, good or bad, it is what it is. But that's not what she's trying to do. She, again, it's the martyr. It's, oh, poor, woe is me. Look what they did to me. Look at, because evidently she kept getting new followers and the engagement wasn't there because for that period of time, and then they delineated it to her, she didn't get to go everywhere. Now that's you know, like a child, like any parent with children, you discipline them. This was her discipline. Now, again, we can have this conversation whether it was right or wrong for a company to be able to do this. But I don't know that we should have the conversation of can they? That sounds like something that you know socialists would say, not God-fearing Christian, free market libertarian laissez-faire capitalists. No. But again, it's only when it suits them. And what's interesting to me is watching the Republican Party shift from that party of corporate America. And look, this is probably a good thing, honestly, to the party of socialized control of government. And this is the scary part because that's really fascistic. You know, when corporations and government, you know, there's problems. And we can have conversations around, is that a problem? But what they're doing is grandstanding. What they're doing is the martyr stuff. They broke the rules, they violated the terms of service, and now they're playing the victim. Understand what free speech is in this country. Free speech is between you and your government. Free speech is not between you and me. You don't get to say whatever you want to me in my home. If you do, you will find yourself on the curb very quickly. That's reality. In the public space between you and your government, you have free speech. But you don't get to go into a private establishment. And the famous one is yell fire in a theater. You don't get to do that. And you don't get to cause mass hysteria on social media platforms. And at some point, there has to be a pulling back on what happens. Because social media is where, and I keep saying this all the time, people are their worst versions of themselves. I can't imagine that Lauren Boebert is as bad of a human being as she comes off on Twitter. At least I hope not. Or any of these folks. Some of the vile stuff that people say in these platforms because they feel that no one is paying attention. No one can touch them. No one can find them. It's amazing to me. And you wonder why we can't have any real discourse. You wonder why we can't have any real back and forth. Social Security thing, for instance. The president did a masterful thing on Tuesday when he got the Republicans, all of their feigned outrage in the State of the Union address to say, no, they're not going to cut Social Security. No, we love Social Security. And then to watch them backpedal after decades of saying, yes, we absolutely are going to cut Social Security. Yes, we're going to stop it from growing. Yes, we're going to privatize it. Yes, we're going to do all these things that most people agree would harm the solvency and the future of it, even my Republican friends. But I keep getting this, well, you know, they don't really mean it. Yes, they do. And I find it interesting that, you know, even Ron DeSantis, you know, when he ran for Congress back in 2012, backed the idea of privatizing Medicare and Social Security, which everybody agrees, or at least most sane, rational people agree that putting those things in the hands of the profiteers is going to do exactly what happens every time we privatize something, whether it's our roads and our bridges or our sewer and our waterways or our parking authorities or you name it. All of the things we have privatized down the line have ended up costing us more for less service and much more shoddy service. But there's a blind faith. This time we're going to do it right. And by doing it right, it means putting more money in their pockets and less in yours. It's the same thing with these Medicare Advantage plans. They give you nice little bells and whistles and, hey, look at the shiny stuff. But when you really need it, when it gets down to brass tacks, it's all about denying you service. It's all about fleecing the government for more by upcharging. It's all about what corporate America does masterfully. And that's line their pockets with massive profits. You think Social Security would be any different? Seriously, had Bush been able to privatize Social Security back when that was the big thing back during his presidency? After the collapse and then the other collapses, do you think you'd have much? It'd be a lot like most people's 401ks. Empty. Lining the pockets of the companies who administer them. That's just the reality. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Got a lot to get to today. Want to hear your thoughts. Also, give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickSmithShow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickSmithShow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Elon Musk fired one of his engineers over the fact that his views were declining on Twitter. Yeah, you can't make this stuff up. Evidently, there weren't enough people seeing his tweets. Musk said, "This is ridiculous. I have more than 100 million followers and only getting tens of thousands of impressions." An employee showed Musk the internal data regarding the engagement of his account along with Google Trends. And I guess they told him Musk was at peak popularity and the search rankings. He had a score of 100. That's the score, he said, a score of 9 today. Engineers had previously investigated whether Musk had somehow been artificially restricted, but found no evidence. And so they fired him. He didn't take it well, was not happy. Fired the engineer. And this is what happens when you have a crummy boss. It's the reality. Most certainly crummy boss. Now, here's the thing. What I love about what's going on is Biden is doing exactly what I said he should do. He's going full on working class hero. He's going full on engage the white working class voter and engage with those communities that feel like they've left behind. You know, the ones that Trump was talking to. Now, I've been telling Democrats this for almost two decades now. You've got to go to those places that feel left behind. You've got to reach out to them, have policies that are going to help them. And look, his blue-collar blueprint to rebuild America is exactly what was needed. It's what Obama should have been doing. They tried a little bit. but it's what they should have been doing all along. Reshoring manufacturing. Now, look, you know, Democrats have a problem. You know, Biden's got a problem. He voted for a lot of the bad Clinton era stuff, just like a lot of Democrats did. That's what bipartisanship will get you. NAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, you know, the end of Glass-Steagall, all Republican wet dream ideas, all, you know, their thing. But in a bipartisan way, they brought conservative Democrats along and corporate Democrats along, of which Biden was one. There's no doubting. There's no denying Biden was one of the corporate Democrats, in my view. This Biden, though, President Biden, and this is why I support him the way I do, I think he has seen what those policies have done to working class communities. And he's working to adjust. He's working to go, okay, you know, we screwed this up. We've got to move in a direction that's going to make sure that we do rebuild those communities, that we do help those families, that we do make America strong. And I agree with him. The State of the Union is strong. I listen to Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I listen to some of the commentators on TV, and they're really hoping and praying for a collapse of the economy. They're hoping and praying for bad employment numbers. They're hoping and praying that what they keep shoveling at us happens. And look, the right-wing echo chamber is so powerful in this country. They've got people believing, you know, things are horrible. Are things perfect? No. Is inflation high? Yes. Nobody sees that more than I do. We went to the grocery store, two bags, $90. I get it. But I think the policies that this administration is moving on are going to help us move in a positive direction. Reshoring that manufacturing, shoring up our supply lines, getting people back to work, investing in infrastructure, good jobs. The way you deal with inflation, because again, I love my friends who email, and please email me often because it's really insightful into the conservative mind, rick@thericksmithshow.com. It's insightful to hear Republicans talk about how much they hate socialism, but then want Biden to act to lower the price on, you name it, eggs, gas, whatever. Like there's some kind of switch in the Oval Office that you go, oh yeah, lower the price. If Biden were to come out and say we're going to have price controls, you would hear the Republicans lose their minds. And all of those people who were emailing me, and again, thank you, saying, you know, Biden needs to do something about price. If he did that, if he gave you what you wanted, you would still whine and complain. Because now that's socialism, and you can't have that. And yet Nixon did it. It's interesting how this all plays itself around. Now, I'm a bit frustrated in the moment because, look, you know, the reality is we can't seem to have these conversations because we've got our red hat and our blue hat on. I want to put a hard hat on and rebuild things. You know, I'm listening, I'm watching this train wreck of I'm in my camp, you're in your camp, and we can never agree on anything. Whereas there is so much we should be able to agree on. We can't. The China thing, for instance, should be able to agree. We don't want China to dominate manufacturing. We should agree that we don't want China to arise as the prominent military power. We should agree that there are things we should be doing to protect ourselves. But because it's...
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes, and even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tamani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for greatest of all time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local. I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows level off around 13. Tonight, under overcast skies, winds out of the northwest 10 to 15 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 24. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Clear skies. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 12. Dry with temperatures well above average Saturday and Sunday, and highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 36.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
2003, 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday mornings at 8 on the Shaw and on the Civic Media app. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a little unity in Congress today. Resolution to condemn the Chinese balloon. 419-0 was the vote, condemning China for its, quote, brazen violation of United States sovereignty. They're seeking more information from the White House to find out exactly what the balloon was. And trust me, as fast as this should go away, it is not going to. There will be weaponization hearings. There'll be oversight hearings. They may even get the banking committee into having a hearing on this because, hey, they're not going to oversee banking anyway. Why not do this? Because like I said at the beginning, they're worried about health care. Hunter Biden's laptop. Worried about your kids going to college? Hunter Biden's laptop. Worried about anything? Here's the diversion. Here's the cat chasing the little laser pointer. And here to share some thoughts on the laser pointer, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello. Happy Thursday.
So balloons. Yes, balloons. Balloons. I thought this would blow over.
Narf, narf. I wish that it would have blown over, but sadly, they're still talking about it. And so they had the Gang of Eight briefing earlier this week. I guess the House had their briefing this morning. I don't think that they included anything that is like major intelligence, because it seems like the House really didn't have a whole lot of information. And the senators who were in the Gang of Eight had little information that they would give us. Yeah. Because, of course, they didn't.
Now, I find it interesting that Romney said that Biden handled the balloon things right.
And I would say what's interesting is that a bunch of Republicans that we talked to on the Hill today and on Monday were kind of saying the same thing. They were hemming and hawing around it by, you know, trying to say it in a different way. But essentially, they were like, I understand why. I think they gave credit more to the Pentagon. They were like, I understand now why the Pentagon did what it did. Why they made that decision, and they didn't really say much more. So I think you'll see some Republicans kind of shut up about blaming Biden for this, because it's very, very clear that the Pentagon was the one that was pushing him to, you know, wait a little bit and see what we could capture from it. And we were blocking the signals to it. So why not?
And this is one of those things where, you know, I said from the beginning, if you don't think that we saw it coming and tracked it every step of the way and were blocking whatever transmissions were coming and capturing whatever data that they were looking for, you're insane. We spend all this money on technology and military. Following a balloon is the least they should be able to do. And I see, look, you know, as someone who coached football for a while, you know, you scout the other team. You want to see what they're looking at. You want to see what the playbook has, because you want to be able to get some insight of what they're going to do. There's knowledge in this, except, you know, I see those children in Congress, you know, doing their thing. Marjorie Trainwreck, you know, walking around with a balloon.
Mm. Oh, my God, that was the most pathetic thing ever. And but I don't think that I wonder if she even went to the briefing, because it seems like something that she would just be like, no, I know everything I need to know.
No, but here's the thing, you know, and I said it over the weekend, the scariest thing for me in this whole balloon saga was her tweet of tomorrow I'm going to get a briefing in the Department of in the Homeland Security Committee. To me, that's the scariest part. The fact that she's going to be in on those Homeland Security meetings.
I'm not sure that there's a lot of secret intelligence happening in that meeting, and I don't know the degree to which Homeland Security would be willing to turn over a lot of secret intelligence to that specific committee. I think the most important thing that was coming out of this is the intelligence briefing and the Pentagon briefings. I think it's funny that she thinks that she would actually get some kind of information from Homeland Security that she wouldn't have gotten from Intel or the Pentagon. It's just like, okay.
I do find it interesting that Trump is now like a lot of things. Trump is literally on every side of every issue. Just give him couple of minutes. He'll find his way. Originally I would have shot it down immediately. Now kind of walking back that I would have shot it down immediately thing.
Well, then it became so it was like, I would have shot this down immediately, which pretty much tells you where it would have gone. Like, he wouldn't have had another option if he just shot it down. But then he decided, oh, you know, I would have made a deal with the Chinese where if they didn't give us what we want, then we'll shoot it down. If they do give us what we want, then I'll make the single greatest deal in history. And you're just like, God, you're such an idiot. But you know, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump,
yeah, the art of the bad deal. Did you see Shinzo Abe's book that the reporting that came out that said that, you know, they thought that Trump was so weak, and so eagerly attempting to make a deal with Kim Jong-un that they were with that he would basically give away the store. And how did they put it that the world leaders were afraid that Kim Jong-un would learn of how did they put it? Trump's dovish tendencies.
Yeah.
I found that to be really, really a perfect statement.
It was a perfect statement because it's not so much that, you know, Trump plays this big game, you know, this big
like any bully.
Sort of. Yeah, like this attitude. But the reality is at the end of the day, like he's really not going to throw a punch. And it's that's sort of the way that he is about everything. And I think a lot of the world leaders that have talked about Trump since he left office have kind of said the same thing where it's just like he's all talk. We were really concerned what he would reveal to somebody because he was so desperate for them to like him. And I'm, you know, it's not surprising to me that that Abe would be concerned about something that he would do or not do. You know, it's everybody talked about how scary it was having him as a United States leader from military, you know, to folks in the White House. So we have to believe them when they tell us that.
Yeah, I mean, it's but again, it comes back to, you know, Saturday Night Live's got a skit for everything. And I still never going to forget that, you know, the lunchroom at the where was it? One of the like the G20 or something where, you know, the, never
that
mind.
Was the best picture. Oh, that was so good. That whole video where they just wouldn't shake hands with him. And then, oh, that was so great.
No, but, you know, the thing is he did that to himself. I mean, the fact that he tried to alienate everyone. And this is where, again, you don't want a leader who's going to have that kind of personality, that I can do it alone. I can make the best deal. I've got the best words. I'm me. And this is where I think the contrast between the Trump era and the Biden era is, which is why I think, you know, Tuesday's State of the Union was such a great speech. I mean, he blew my expectations away. Because look, I didn't have the bar really high. He, you know, home run. I mean, he knocked it out of the park.
You know, like I'm a big Biden fan and have been for a long time. So I hate to say it, but my expectations were really, really low as well. And I was already grumpy that I had to work that night anyway. So the first part of it was, you know, it was pretty normal. And I was surprised that he didn't, you know, roll into the easy applause lines with, you know, starting with the people in the first lady's box, because that's sort of the easy way to get the crowd into what you're saying. And he just went straight to issues and straight to owning the conservatives. And it was basically, you know, an 80-year-old man beating up on 200 Republicans and winning.
No, but it's the speech that I would have written, because it was all about how we're going to make working class folks' lives better. Mm-hmm. How we're going to move forward, how we're going to rebuild, revive, and reunionize this country. That to me was, and I said it before the speech began, this is where he's got to be. This is where Democrats need to find their wheelhouse. This is what they have to do if they're going to win elections going forward, is they need to get back into communities that feel abandoned. The people that Trump talked to and talk the talk like Biden did, but also walk the walk as he laid out in his policies. So for me, you know, it's all about, you know, what are they saying? Dark Brandon, you know, delivers. This is it.
Oh, my God. All of the memes that came out of it were amazing. You know, lots of photos of Biden with sunglasses on for Dark Brandon all over TikTok. But yeah, I think we've heard him talk particularly to union workers for the last couple of years. You know, all of the union contracts that are coming out now for transportation and all of that, like they're bringing so many jobs to union homes that I don't see how anybody could ever compare it to anything that Donald Trump did. And I'm sure that there will be conservatives that do, who think that somehow Donald Trump still made their lives better, even though they worked less and made less. But it blows me away. It's just like, oh, finally, we have a president who really values the middle class, the working, a living wage, healthcare, all of the things that working families really deserve. And I feel like we fought for so long. And I'm just like, oh, finally, right? Like, there are still some wars that we have to fight. There are still some things that we're trying to get, like our, you know, equal rights for women to be able to govern themselves. But at the very least, folks are making, you know, a little bit better wage and have jobs this, you know, this time around.
I found it interesting that it's some in the media were focused on, you brought up, you know, women's rights, and, you know, that he only spent 42 seconds on abortion or on choice. You got a problem with that?
I think he said what he needed to say. And it's like, sure, you can pass whatever you want to, but I'm going to veto it. So bite me. I mean, there's really nothing else that you need to say. That's, I'm good. I'm good with that.
For the guy, for a guy who gave the longest speech in the last, you know, 60 years, he was fairly concise on that, on a lot of issues. I mean, there were a lot of issues in that speech. There was a lot to dig into.
And I feel like it would have been a little bit shorter if Republicans had just shut up, because I feel like he probably ad-libbed a lot more than what was in the speech whenever he started going after Republicans and, you know, fishing a little bit for their boos and then leading them into a cheer.
Did you find it humorous, like as I did, that James Carville, who said that, I tell people I have the equivalent of a PhD in white trashology, and we saw real white trash on display. The level of white trashdom in the Republican Party is staggering. Carville said, I mean, for somebody that has observed it for a long time, like I have, I've never seen it manifest itself on a level that it's manifesting itself now.
And the thing is that only James Carville could get away with that, because he is sort of from the white trash world. Like, I hail from redneck blood, right? So I feel like I can, those are my people that I can trash. Whereas James Carville is like, you know, the white trash are his people. And so he knows that. And I remember, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, somebody wrote about Marjorie Taylor Greene and called her low rent, which I feel like was really the polite way of saying white trash. but James Carville just went there. And just I was just sort of listening, half listening out of my mind or out of the corner of my ear. And then I was just like, oh my God, did he just say what I thought he said? And sort of ran it back and was like, oh wow. Okay. Well, there we go.
No, I mean, I was like, wow, because he's, you know, famously quoted with the Pennsylvania statement of, you know, Pittsburgh on one end, Philadelphia on the other, and Alabama in the middle. And again, only he can come out with that and say something like that. Anybody else would have just been, you know, just skewered.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm not sure I would have extended white trashdom to the whole Republican Party. I think that there are a lot of rednecks mixed in there, because I see a lot of, you know, my uncles in there. But, you know, whatever you want to describe it as, I say, go for it. I'm not sure what you would call George Santos, but he's something is what he is.
A criminal?
Maybe? A criminal, right?
I don't know.
He's just sketchy dude.
Sketchy? Sketchy's a good one. Sketchy? Yeah. Okay, we can go there. So let me ask you, since you brought up Santos, good idea, bad idea, Representative Garcia, you know, telling the Ethics Committee he wants him out. I think the Democrats, the part of me goes, the Democrats should stay the heck out of it. We'll let the Republicans wear this. But I also think that it's brilliant in the fact that Republicans control everything now. And by making them decide, yes, we're going to vote to keep him, I'm now rethinking the strategy here a little bit.
So I'm kind of the mind where you can't lose in this situation, because even if Democrats lobbied to push him out, then McCarthy would have one fewer vote that he could rely on, at least for several months before they could get somebody elected and get somebody in that office. And then, you know, the alternative is they're going to, you know, get rid of him. And then again, they're going to have one fewer vote to count on. And so I feel like Democrats win either way. And you're right. We can all just sort of sit back and be like, entertain me. Dance,
where's the popcorn?
Dance.
Yeah, dance, dance, monkeys. you're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to check out her incredible work. I got to get your thoughts on what was one of the creepier responses to a State of the Union that I've seen. I questioned Sarah Huckabee Sanders as the person giving the response, because, yeah, I think she's off on the fringe anyway. But wow, she did not disappoint with the crazy. In fact, I loved her frame of, you know, normal versus crazy. And it got me questioning, which do you think you are in this equation?
Yeah, that was the best thing. And it was hilarious that she said it, because then everybody else was just like, oh, wow, finally we agree on something. This really is normal versus crazy. I heard somebody comment on it. I don't remember who it was, said that this really wasn't a speech for America. It was a speech for Donald Trump. And I think I buy that. I mean, it was very much like that whole section about how she traveled with Donald Trump and it made them feel like they were in the military. That was the thing where I feel like the whole country just groaned and rolled their eyes at once together.
Yeah, but if you listen to Lou Dobbs, Lou Dobbs said that no, she didn't do enough paying of homage to Trump.
Okay, sure. You do you, Lou Dobbs. I think she did plenty, even if she didn't say his name. I think this idea of the apocalypse, of, you know, us living in The Walking Dead, was news to a lot of people. I think a lot of folks were like, wait, what? What's happening? Because if you don't watch Fox News all day long, you really don't hear these kinds of abbreviations and terms and these culture wars. I'm shocked that she didn't go after M&Ms at one point, you know, and have a whole discussion about the, you know, the fat M&Ms. Who knew? Remember the obese M&Ms that Tucker Carlson freaked out about? And you're like, dude, they have peanuts in them. You idiot. Come on. Peanut M&Ms.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Look, the sad thing is it's funny, but it's dangerous. I mean, because
I know it's so hard because you want to laugh because it's, you know, it is funny, but at the same time you're like, God, this really sucks because it's scary. And but again,
I want to mock her.
Part
I do.
Of me, I
want to mock her.
And the whole time I was watching it, I was just like, oh my Lord, she is wearing white before Memorial Day.
No, I want to mock her in every way, shape, or form. But the reality is I know there are people who they want her as president someday.
I know.
And that woman is president. What?
Yeah, there's no way that's gonna happen. I mean,
oh, please don't say that.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, people used to talk about how unattractive Hillary Clinton was. It's like, my mom still thinks she has a glass eye. So, like, there's Sarah Huckabee-Sand is not, you know, the most glamorous person to stick up there.
Yeah, but she's ugly. But I don't care what she looks out in the mirror. She's ugly inside to the core. That is an ugly human being.
And I think that's what will turn a lot of people off. And again, like, this was a speech that was really just for 30% of the country. It wasn't for the rest of it. And if you're really trying to persuade the rest of the country right now, if you're trying to pull people onto your side, when it's very clear that America does not support any of the things the Republican Party is doing, you know, I think that was the wrong message to try and hit people with, because yeah. I think folks just tuned that out.
Now, speaking of hitting people, January 6th, the little insurrection thing, the guy who carried the Confederate flag through the Capitol, 3 years in jail today.
3 years. Bummer. Sucks to be you. You know, that's all you can say, right? It's just like, you know, sucks to be you.
Finally, speaking of jail, I saw this story. Maybe you can help me with it. Evidently, Donald Trump says he's going to hand over his DNA. Granted, he's late. I mean, the deadline has passed. And this is kind of, again, I think like the tax returns. I'll give them to you. Never. But this is the first I've heard that there's a dress. This is the first that I've, and I haven't really been following this, but this is the first that I've heard. There's a black coat dress. Stains on the black coat dress, potentially.
So that was one of the things that she talked a little bit about. I think it was in her book, where she mentioned that she still had the garment that she was wearing. And I can't remember again, like, I think you're right. Like, it was a coat dress or something. But yeah, she said that she definitely had it. There has been, and he's willing to, you know, give forth his DNA. What is interesting about that is there is now also this conversation about the statute of limitations in the state of New York. And New York has this sort of weird, obscure law that says that if you are out of the state for 5 years or for however many years, that those years don't count as the statute of limitations on this case. So the statute would actually be, you know, the 4 years that he did not live in New York and was living in Washington, that would, you could reduce his, you know, that statute by 4 years. I don't know if that's how that's going to work. I don't know if they're going to really make that argument. That's just what the nerds, the legal nerds have been saying.
Yeah. Look, there's no way he's convicted on a criminal charge of this. Maybe this is part of the, because this is part of a civil trial. I don't want to get people all he's going to go to, he's not. I don't think any of that's going to happen, but I do find
it
interesting.
He hasn't settled it though. I mean, really shocked that he hasn't settled it out of court.
Well, I don't think she'll let it be settled out of court.
Fair. Yeah.
I mean, if I'm her, point. There's no way I settle this. I want, if honestly and truthfully,
if it's true,
you want to take this to the end no matter what, because I don't think she needs the money. It's not like you can strong arm her and go, well, you're not going to be able to put food on the table. Take this meager sum to shut up and go away. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is about if it happened, and I'm not saying it did or it didn't. I'm staying out of it. I don't know. Wasn't there. But if it did, I'd be taking it to. Well, I never mind what I would have done, but that's a whole nother story for a whole nother show. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see if the DNA ever comes forth. I say never going to happen.
I don't think he would either. I think it's probably just him bloviating. And I think his lawyers are going to be like, you need to shut up and stop saying that you're going to do this. Because you're not.
Up. Yep. Yeah. As any good lawyer worth their salt would do. But Sarah, appreciate the time as always.
Thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, our good friend Sarah Burris. Check out her work, rawstory.com, where you find that. Quick break, right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1854. That was the day that novelist George Lepard died in Philadelphia. Lepard was friends with Edgar Allan Poe. He is most well known for his novel about Philadelphia, titled Quaker City. The book is considered to be one of the first American muckraking novels. Muckrakers write to uncover misconduct, or muck, in public life. The book cast the city elites in an unflattering light and explored the crooked underbelly of the city. The elites did not much care for the book, but the working class made it the best-selling novel in the country. In 1849, Lepard helped found the Brotherhood of the Union, which later became known as the Brotherhood of America. It was a secret benevolent society, a kind of Freemasons for the working man. The Brotherhood issued badges and medals. They borrowed from names and symbols of the American Revolution. They promoted a shorter workday, education, and election reform. By 1850, the Brotherhood had expanded to 19 states. Lepard was elected Supreme Washington, the highest title for the leadership position of the group. He died a few years later, succumbing to tuberculosis at the age of just 31. But the Brotherhood continued long after his death into the late 20th century. In a book about New York, Lepard once wrote, "Enormous wealth is only enormous crime. Yes, we may phrase it as we will, the immense concentration of wealth in the hands of any one man or in the hands of any corporate power is an evil fraught with more danger to the happiness and liberty of the nation than all the crowned tyrants of the world." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Another tragedy in New York, New Jersey. Wow, a New Jersey council member, New Jersey City council member shot dead.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcast